Well, good day and welcome to the show. I'm Maggie Linton. On this day in 1952, Queen Elizabeth II succeeded King George IV to the British throne, and she's still there. In 1967, Muhammad Ali won the heavyweight boxing title with a TKO of Ernie Terrell. Later this hour, Manny Scott, the founder of Inc. International, will discuss his rise from poverty to success using writing as a tool and his book, Your Next Chapter. But we begin the hour with a man who works daily to improve America's economic power at home and around the world. Jay Williams is U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development. A Youngstown, Ohio native and former mayor, Jay has had a stellar career in finance as well as public service. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Maggie.
It's so good to have you.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
We should say we met each other a couple of weeks ago.
We did.
At the Hope Global Forum.
It was a great event, and I was thrilled that you offered us an opportunity to come on. So thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. Let's begin with your job to really get America turned around so the goods are coming in and going out.
Absolutely. So I have the privilege of serving as the Assistant Secretary for Economic Development at the U.S. Department of Commerce. The agency that I'm a part of is the Economic Development Administration. It's a federal agency. As a matter of fact, it's the only federal agency whose mission is solely devoted toward helping to create economic opportunity, specifically in communities across this country that are economically distressed. So as you talked about, we live in a very globalized economy, and there are too many communities across this country that for a number of years have done well, but then have seen a decline. And, you know, we can talk about certainly the Great Recession that we're coming out of. But EDA now in its 50th year has been charged with helping to create opportunities on the ground in those communities, working with local officials. We don't dictate what's in their best interest. You know, this isn't a top-down program that the federal government's coming in and taking over. These are programs that are really driven by the priorities as identified by the folks in those communities.
And as we look at those communities, there are so many that are struggling. You, as a former mayor of Youngstown, Ohio, really helped turn that around as manufacturing moved away. You had to find other sources and be creative at the same time.
Absolutely. And I can't think of a better proving ground or preparation to serve in this current capacity than having served as the mayor of my hometown in Youngstown, Ohio, a manufacturing town that 50-60 years ago, extremely prosperous, great rates of home ownership. Youngstown manufactured steel that helped build this country, helped win the world wars. And then in the 70s, the collapse of the steel industry really set Youngstown back in any number of ways. And having been born in the 70s and grown up in Youngstown during some of the most difficult economic times, I was honored to be elected as the first African-American mayor of that city back in 2005, and was just a small part of what has been an ongoing transformation of the city's economy. While manufacturing, as you pointed out, still plays a very important role, the city is now known for the investments that are coming with respect to technology, innovation, the Youngstown Business Incubator is doing well, Youngstown State University. So there are a whole host of things and a new emerging class of entrepreneurs that are really helping to keep Youngstown relevant. So, you know, to have served in that capacity and then have the opportunity to serve in this capacity with this administration, there wasn't a better proving ground.
You just mentioned something that I was going to talk about, and that's entrepreneurs, because way too many people don't realize just how much help there is out there to help get them started. But they've got to know the proper channels, be prepared to go. Talk a little bit about that.
That's a great point. I remember as a kid, my father telling me that it's great to have a good job, but as long as you work for someone else, you're always going to be limited to, you know, their aspirations or their vision, or there will always be that ceiling there. So helping entrepreneurs to gain access to information is a core part of what we do at the Economic Development Administration. It's also a core part of what this administration has been doing through programs that the SBA has, and that's a separate government agency. But EDA, we invest in communities, in facilities that help bring entrepreneurs the information, the access to the resources that they need. And that is so critical, is there is a lot of information out there. There are a lot of resources, some of them from the public sector, some of them from the private sector. But if you don't have that information where it's accessible to those entrepreneurs, they will struggle unnecessarily. Some of them, won't even begin to pursue their dreams of entrepreneurship. So we have an office within EDA that's specifically devoted to innovation and entrepreneurship. So, again, it's just a joy to see those opportunities be afforded to people across this country. And we've seen some great successes as a result of those programs.
And so much of also what you do is really hooking folks up.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the entrepreneurs, but even those established businesses, they may be struggling in their hometown, not realizing that in the very next town, it's something that is needed.
Absolutely. The convening power, that's one of the strengths that we bring as EDA, is the power to convene those stakeholders. Stakeholders in the same community, stakeholders in the same region. Maybe, like you said, it's a community just a few minutes away, not realizing the assets, the knowledge, the experience that is there. So to the extent that through our regional offices, we have six regions that we cover. Well, our six regions cover the entire country. In those regional offices, we have a dedicated group of employees who are really on the ground. I think that's what makes EDA unique and special, is that we are really working closely with the folks on the ground in those communities, helping to make those connections that you talked about.
Yeah. Folks, if anybody has any questions or comments, you're certainly welcome to join. The number is 866-801-8255. Once again, it's 866-801-8255. You're not going to have a chance that often to talk to Jay Williams. He is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development. I know we're still working with trying to recover from so much of our manufacturing and business going out of this country. Talk about what's being done to help not only keep it here, but spread it to the right places around the world.
That's a great point. And I'm always, look for the opportunity to make sure that people understand the context of where we've come from the first day of this administration. When the president took office, we were facing the greatest economic decline this country had seen outside of the Great Depression. We were losing upwards of 800,000 jobs per month. 8 million jobs were lost before the president could even put his policies in place. We saw the collapse of Wall Street. We saw banking institutions, the financial institutions that were built
auto
on—
auto industry.
Absolutely, the auto industry. All of those things were either collapsing or had already fallen. So when the president took office, we had unemployment rate that was over 10%. So to see the recovery over the last 6 years, where we've seen over 11 million jobs created under this administration in the private sector, where we've seen manufacturing come back, and we'll talk about that, over 800,000 jobs have been created in manufacturing. This is the greatest expansion in manufacturing since the 1990s. We've seen unemployment rate down to 5.7%. We've seen, again, a return of stability in the financial markets. The housing crisis, while there are still a lot of work to be done, the peak of that crisis has passed. But specifically, when you talk about manufacturing, when the president came in office and you brought up the auto industry, a lot of people had written that industry off. They had written U.S. manufacturing off. And there were those that said, well, we need to let the U.S. auto manufacturers collapse under their own weight. The market will sort it out, and we should stand back and let the market take care of itself. Against some very advice from some people who were experienced and who were quote-unquote experts, the president said no, that he did not believe that it would be in the best interest of this country or the American workers to allow that industry to collapse. So he made significant investments in the restructuring of the auto industry. And as a matter of fact, that was my first experience with the administration, serving as the auto recovery office director. And the president said that we're going to make the investments necessary, make the investments first and foremost in the American worker, because he believed that the resilience, the innovation would ultimately bring this country back on its feet. And in doing that, significant risks were taken. But now that we've seen the auto industry come back, they are more profitable than they've ever been. They're creating products that are the envy of the world in terms of technological efficiency, fuel efficiency. They are exceptionally appealing. We just had an opportunity to go to the North American Auto Show in Detroit and to see the response to the vehicles that all of the automakers are releasing. Not only that, but the supply network. Had the auto industry collapsed, there are a number of documented experts who have indicated that an additional 1 million jobs would have been lost. Had GM and Chrysler been allowed to collapse, the chairman of Ford said it would have been devastating for Ford, even though they weren't a part of that restructuring. So the president, with that commitment to U.S. manufacturing, we've seen now the growth and expansion of manufacturing, which provides higher wages to the American workers, which provides an added benefit to the economy, because for every dollar you see spent on manufacturing, it's $1.40 impact to the economy. And to your point of making sure that the benefits of that are spread throughout this country, the president has proposed a network of national manufacturing institutes to make sure that communities that have seen that decline, that have seen the exodus of those jobs for 10 and 20 and 30 years, have an opportunity to be a part of the strong manufacturing network. So we've seen a lot of success, and it's a work in progress, but that is a core part of this president's commitment.
One of the things I have heard, though, because of friends that I know that have worked in the industry, is a number of the retired workers saw a hit on their pensions. And as some of that restoration has begun, but there's more to come.
There's more work to be done, inarguably. And the president is the first to say it. While we are recognizing and should acknowledge the how far we've come, there is much more work to be done. And a part of that goes to what he has unveiled in this budget, continuing to invest in the American economy. He has used the term that we've got to get away from this mindless austerity. It's very important that we make sure that we have a deficit that's under control and that's stable. But it's also important that you can't cut your way out of you can't cut your way to prosperity and economic opportunity. So the president in this budget, recognizing that there's more work to be done, wants to invest in things like making sure that workers are trained, making sure that we have educational opportunities, making sure that, again, we have stable financial markets. So when you have a prosperous economy, it then allows for more of that recovery to happen. But for those that think we just have to continue cut and take away and have austerity that is detrimental to the middle class economics that the president is trying to promote, he just thinks otherwise. And I think the evidence that we've seen in its recovery points to the fact that the president's policies are certainly been working.
Yeah, made money off of that little recovery for the auto industries. We've got a call from Allie in Arkansas. You're going to have to put on your headphones to hear Allie. Hang on a second, Allie. go ahead, Allie from Arkansas.
Yes. That's me, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Yes. My question is the President's Public Works Program, from what I understand, has been proposed. And I think it's needed, but my question to Mr. Williams is, does he think that it will go through, and does he foresee much opposition to the infrastructure, the public works program that the president has?
That's a great question. And from the very first days in office, the president has been saying that we have to invest in America's infrastructure, the roads, the bridges, the airports, the broadband infrastructure. It is fundamental to have a country that is positioned well in terms of infrastructure in order for us to compete on the global economic scale that we're involved in. So the president has proposed to Congress a number of initiatives, from creating a national infrastructure bank to paying for infrastructure investments through the restructuring of the tax code. And there are some Democrats and Republicans who believe and agree with him. However, there has been a significant amount of opposition. So what the president is doing in the face of Congress, a Congress that will not act, he is using his executive authority to make investments in infrastructure. A part of that question goes directly to the Economic Development Administration. We have the largest part of our budget is geared toward public works, making those investments in communities that ultimately we see the public investment leveraged by private investment multiple times over. So although there has been some resistance in Congress, the president continues to put infrastructure investments at the top of his priority list. He is looking for ways to work with the private sector to make sure that we have the resources needed to invest. Not only is it important for the country, it is a job-creating initiative. When those public works projects are funded, we see people with an opportunity to gain additional skills, gain additional job opportunities. So, yes, there has been resistance, but that has not deterred the president from continuing to make the investments and to propose to Congress ways to fund infrastructure in this country.
Like to also add that there are many young men, especially in my neighborhood, that could use these jobs, carpentry or just regular cleanup around these bridges or whatever. So it's very much needed, and it's urgently needed at this particular time. And I thank you.
Couldn't agree with you more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ollie. Once again, folks, if you have any questions or comments, 866-801-8255. Once again, 866-801-8255. You know, trying to create the jobs beyond the service industries can be some of the hardest things to do. And again, that's when you look toward the entrepreneurs, the established businesses to help pick up some of that slack.
You're absolutely right. And at the end of the day, jobs aren't created by government or by political officials. Jobs are created in the private sector. But what role we have and the obligation and responsibility that we have in the public sector is to create the environment, to create the conditions or help to create the conditions on the ground where those jobs are ultimately then driven by private investment. And you're absolutely right in terms of that's why it's also, and Ali brought this up, making sure that there are a range of opportunities from apprenticeship programs. He talked about the young men in his neighborhood. I'm sure that the young men in his neighborhood are very similar to the young men in the neighborhoods of Youngstown, Ohio, or Cleveland, or Flint, Michigan, or so many of the other places, making sure that they are given an opportunity. As a matter of fact, we were in Detroit, and I love what Mayor Dugan said, that he said that talent, he believes, is equally spread, but opportunity is not. And that's a part of this president's agenda, to make sure that there are opportunities spread throughout the United States that give those young men and young women a chance. Those are also investments that we make at the Economic Development Administration. For instance, we've invested in Operation Hope. That was a good example of the $2.5 million that John Hope and his organization will use to train entrepreneurs in money management skills and credit management skills, to give them additional access to capital, to help them be successful entrepreneurs. We invested in a program called Respond, Inc. in Camden, New Jersey. The residents of Camden, New Jersey came together and put together a nonprofit that helps to train individuals, many of them ex-offenders, many of them some of the most difficult to employ, to have skills that are ready to put them to work in the automotive technology industry. A number of those graduates from that program have gone on to start their own businesses. So it is absolutely critical that we, again, continue to make sure that those opportunities are available, and infrastructure and public works are just one of the key ways to help that happen.
When you mention finances, that's one thing that you always hear of, the waste of not just in government, but also in private industry, that because people don't know how to manage their money. And as you reach out and help with the programs through economic development and talk about what's being done there to help make them more of a savvy businessman.
That's a great question. And there are always ways to improve, whether it's the public sector or private sector. I've spent enough time in the public sector and enough time in the private sector to say
that there are problems with each.
And one of the things that there's a continuous improvement that is the mindset of this administration. But in terms of sometimes just that basic financial literacy, that is so important that people, even at an earlier and earlier age, we've gotten away in some of our school systems of what used to be called home economics when I was in school. I'm dating myself. But just the basic fundamental.
You see me raising my hand.
But the basic fundamentals of money management and credit management, and particularly in the African-American neighborhoods, we see a proliferation of things like the check cashing and the payday lenders, and they prey upon the fact that people aren't as savvy with their own finances as they need to be, and they end up paying exorbitant interest rates. So there's a couple of approaches that this administration have taken. One is to make sure that that financial literacy is spread far and wide, making sure that we are making the types of investments in reputable organizations that are helping people to understand the basics of money management. It doesn't have to be sophisticated, but it does have to be something that, you know, meets them where they are. The other thing that the president has done is created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, headed by a friend of mine, Richard Cordray, making sure that, again, those institutions can't come in and take advantage and use deceptive lending practices and predatory lending practices to take advantage of individuals who, you know, just need a little bit of assistance, but find themselves in this vicious cycle of being unable to get out of debt or unable to get out of these very difficult financial contracts. So, you know, financial literacy is critically important. It is important for young and old. But one of the things that we have found is that if you start young people off early with some of these lessons, it then tends to carry through the rest of their life.
For years, you know, growing up, reading, writing, and arithmetic was part of that, the three R's.
Right.
Even though arithmetic, we know, is really spelled with an A. Just thought I'd say that, throw it out there. But at the same time, it should have also been something financial.
Absolutely.
Not just adding up numbers, but adding up numbers that make you understand what dollar cost averaging is about, what investing is, and things along those lines. And that's one of the things that's missing across our educational levels all the way.
Absolutely. And the power,
and the earlier you start, the better you know.
The better. The power of compound interest. We're trying to, my wife and I have a 4-year-old son, and we're trying to teach him the importance of a dollar. You just don't go to the store and see something, and because mom and dad can write a check, or mom and dad can pull a piece of plastic out of your wallet, and all of a sudden it's magically there. There's just endless supply. But understanding the power of saving, when people understand how compound interest works, again, which isn't a complex concept, but something that is often overlooked, and the power of saving that money and letting that interest work for you over time. You know, those in this society who have become exceptionally successful, their money is working for them. You know, so often we're working for our money, but that you want to get to a point where your money is doing the work for you and you're making those choices. So, again, you're right. The younger we can teach that, and the more we can reiterate that, but also for those of us who are a little bit older and who have, you know, made mistakes, learning that there is still time to recover, even if you're 40 or 50 or 60 or 70, making better financial decisions at any point in your life certainly is better than saying, well, you know what, I've made so many decisions now, I find myself in a hole that I can't get out of. So it's really critical that we get that as part of what we do.
American manufacturing and the risk, you know, going both ways out of the country and coming back in. Let's talk about some of the advantages that may be going out of the country in order to help bolster what's going on here.
That's a great, great segue into what the president is now pushing in terms of investing in trade promotion authority. We are in a globalized marketplace.
Mm-hmm. And they just opened up Cuba.
And they just opened up.
Who wants some American car parts?
95% of the world's population lives outside of the United States. 95% of the population of the global economy is outside of the United States. 80% of the purchasing power is outside of the United States. So while people say, well, globalization has resulted in job loss and globalization has hurt communities across this country, there is some validity to that. Trade agreements that we have done in the past have not always lived up to the hype. But this president is committed to pushing trade agreements that have a sense of equity and fairness, that recognize that trade agreements in the past have been harmful to communities across this country, but we can't stick our heads in the sand and say, well, we don't want to trade. And one of the perfect examples is what's going on in again, my hometown, Youngstown, Ohio, mm-hmm. An economically distressed area that is still emerging. But Youngstown in the Mahoning Valley is actually leading the nation in export growth. So those companies in the Mahoning Valley or in Detroit or in any, you name any region across this country, instead of just trying to, how can I sell more to people in the neighborhood, or how can I sell more to people in the state, which is a good strategy, how can I get my goods and services to people in Mexico and India and China and places across the globe? So that is a one of the current priorities of this administration. And fortunately, we've got both Democrat and Republican support. There's some people who are still skeptical, but
always
opening up those markets to American goods that are wanted across the globe and making sure that there are fair trading policies, that they're living up to their end of the deal, is one of the things that this president is pushing as we speak.
As we have said, once again, we're talking with U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development, Jay Williams. He's busy, folks, trying to get America rolling again in a very positive way. If you could say something to the folks out there who are listening, who are maybe sitting on the fence with their entrepreneurship or maybe not knowing which way to take their business, what would you say?
I would say that first and foremost, making sure that you have a wealth of information. There is nothing wrong with doing the in fact, it is recommended that you put a plan together, that you do your research, and that you don't be afraid to fail. And that's one of the things that successful entrepreneurs will let you know, that, you know, you're going to go out. Maybe that first idea isn't the home run, or the fourth or the fifth or the 12th idea isn't the home run. But understanding something that you're passionate about, doing your homework and doing your research, going to the website of SBA, SBA.gov, going to EDA.gov, understanding and gathering all the information that is necessary to, again, not guarantee success, but certainly help improve the opportunities or the odds that you'll be successful in those businesses. And, you know, one of the, again, the hallmarks of this country has been it is a country of innovation, it is a country that gives you an opportunity to take an idea. And the idea I like to use, and you know, it seems funny now, but it was a genius idea for the person who came up with the pet rock. So the individual who said, I'm going to take something that we all have in our driveway or out in our backyard, I'm going to put it in a box, you know, put a name on it and sell this pet rock. And it has made tens and tens of millions of dollars. And you look at the thing now and you're saying, you know, I'm trying to sweep rocks off my front porch, and he's getting people to sell rocks for whatever the price happened to be at the time. But it just goes to show that that's what this country is about. If you have a great idea and an ability to persuade people to buy your service or your project or your product, the sky's the limit. And there's nothing more gratifying that entrepreneurs will tell you than trying to figure out that puzzle.
I just thought of Chia Pets, too.
A Chia Pet, same thing, the modern-day pet rock, absolutely.
Yeah, sometimes my husband calls my hairstyle Chia Pet. Anyway, listen, thank you so much. Wonderful having you come
Glad to be
in.
Here, thank you.
Once again, it is U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development, Jay Williams. Lots more at the website, EDA.gov. Also, they Facebook and tweet at US_EDA. Thank you.
Continued
success.
You also. Thank you.
And thank you, Breland, for setting it up.
Thank you.
There's always somebody else in the studio. We love that. When we return, writing to a better life. But first, poetry. A salute to the Black poets? No. Okay. When we come back, a salute to the Black poets, but also writing to a better life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Man, I'm like, I thought...
We'll be right back with more conversation about today's hottest topics right after this short break. This is the Maggie Linton Show on Sirius XM Urban View.